Hello, my name is Samuel Shaib, and I'm documenting my journey from immigrant professional to entrepreneur, and highlighting the lessons I have learned from the works of the coaches and mentors who are guiding me. Each week, you will get to hear me share steps I'm taking to build my business, as well as conversations with other successful and like-minded individuals. I bring on these leaders and business owners to tell their stories of success and failure so we can take and apply the lessons they have learned over the years. If you are an internationally trained professional just like me, or an entrepreneur in the early stages of your business, or maybe you are still in your 9-to-5 and probably considering starting your own business and looking for guidance from some of the brightest minds on how to create a lifestyle of freedom, absolute control and fulfillment in life and business, then this is for you. Welcome to the Lead Podcast.
This is the League of Icons. Mine your mind. Be your focus and play by a different set of rules.
I have with me Jide Benson. Jide Benson is the Chief Executive Officer of Cast PR. I've known Jide for the last couple of years, I would say almost 10 years, if not more right now. And I view Jide as someone that has come through a lot in his journey. And I thought Jide would be a good example of an icon to highlight on today's episode. Jide, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Sam. It's a pleasure and I'm humbled.
The pleasure is also mine. So Jide, I'll just have you briefly share with us.
I'm a Nigerian. I live in Lagos. My parents told me that I was born on the 18th of November. Using street lingo, you can call me a hustler. But I'm many things. I run a second generation printing business. And then I run my own public relations company. In between those two, I am professional master of ceremonies. I MC at corporate events and social events. I broadcast on radio part-time and I lecture part-time. So that's a summary of the things that I do.
Amazing. You know, just listening to that brief intro that you just gave, Jide, I'm aware of all of these things, but just listening to you again, it's giving me goosebumps. Because I can see, honestly, and this is why I thought you'd be an excellent guest to have on the show. Just listen to you. It just gives me goosebumps because you're talking and I'm casting my mind back to when I first met you in, I think it was 2009 or 10.
2008.
Well, yeah. I met you for the first time. It was our Masters of Science in Media and Communication. And, yes. You know, and I'm just casting my mind, my memory back then, far back. I'm listening to you now, and I'm trying to compare you with the man of almost 10 years ago, 10 years, I don't know for how many
12
years.
That, years actually.
Yeah, 12 years, you know. I'm seeing the transformation over the years, and I'm hoping that this will be an explosive episode where people can actually listen to your story. Now, you mentioned that you run a second generation printing firm. And when I first met you, this was the part I knew about you. Give us a brief background of this printing press.
Fine, yeah. My father was in corporate communications as well. And then when he left paid employment, he started his own printing and marketing services company. As it was then, when you're in secondary school and you're on holiday, once in a while, your dad will ask you to come to the office, to come and do your homework so that you don't stay at home and you're playing. Or he'll ask you to come and lend a hand. And then consciously and unconsciously, I started learning a few things about printing. As I advanced in age, he got me involved in the business. I learned the ropes. I learned the technical part. I learned the business part. And so when I was my final year in school, I think it was 8 days to my birthday and 2 weeks to my final exam, my father died. And so I woke up the following morning and I had to carry on with the business. And having to fit into a shoe that was bigger than me was a very difficult one. So the business nearly collapsed on my head. But of course, with the support of different people, we came from wherever, God sent helpers. Some of them were family, some of them were friends. I was able to stabilize and carry on with it. I'm still running it.
Awesome. Date. So I'm aware at the point we met, you were having this challenge at the time. And I think if I remember one of our conversations back then, you weren't so sure if it was something you're going to if you're going to continue to run, because again, because of the challenges that you mentioned. How old were you at this time when you were thrusted into entrepreneurship?
I was 24.
Basically, the experience you had prior to that time was the once in a while that you popped into the office to help your dad.
Yes, that was it. That was it.
Were there any guiding principles sort of that he probably shared with you, you know, words of wisdom back then?
Oh yeah, there were a lot. But beyond that was that he didn't pamper me. While we were at the office, he treated me like a staff, not like a son. So he made me do everything that the other members of staff were doing. And of course, the only thing was that he cautioned me. As I was learning, I was mindful of the fact that I had the higher responsibility than the members of the staff. I'm not just a staff, but I'm the son of the owner. So the things that they decide to be careless about, I cannot afford to be, because it will, in quotes, come back to haunt me. My father, in terms of wisdom, my father had a lot of that. My father is my number one hero and mentor and role model.
It's amazing that you mentioned your dad being your number one hero. That would just kind of lead me into this next question about who are the people that you would say besides your father that have contributed to the growth that you've experienced over the years?
Okay, so let me say that it changes with like times and seasons.
Obviously.
When I was younger, I had a different set of role models and mentors than I have now. So, but if I have to mention names, one name that I would mention was a man called Gamal Elonosade. So Gamal Elonosade was a neighbor of mine. He was literally six buildings away from where I live.
Oh, really?
Yes. And my mother always spoke about him so eloquently. So, you know, when you misbehave as a teenager and as a parent, and every time they wanted to scold you, they would mention the name of what, a man called Gamal Elonosade. And those are people that I'm supposed to see as role models and mentors and what have you. I didn't know who he was. I didn't care about who he was. In fact, at that time, anytime I heard his name, I used to be very angry.
Because
one day I was standing in front of my house and his cars drove by. And my mom said, oh, that's the Gamal Elonosade I'm always talking about. And I said, oh, I didn't see him. As God will have it, a few days later, the same car was passing by. I think at that time, he was either chairman or managing director of Dunlop. So I was able to recognize the car because it had the logo of Dunlop on it.
On it.
So as he drove by, when he drove further a bit, he was held up in traffic. So I ran towards the car just to peep into it to see who was there. And then that was the first picture I saw of him. And then I realized that it was somebody I had seen in the papers a lot of times. So I think the first person would be Gamal Elonosade. And thankfully, I had the privilege to meet him a few years before he died. Mm. That was MC at his 80th birthday. There are also a few other people who I haven't met. Some I've also met. I like Patutomi. I appreciate him. There's Ibisho Fekun. So Ibisho Fekun's story is a very interesting one because my father mentored him. And then he now mentors me.
Hmm.
There's also Christopher Kolade. And then some of my lecturers in school at different times. But number one, like I said, is my father.
Now, as you're speaking, it's beginning to give me some clarity and context, because I'm not sure whose quote this was, but he says, you cannot see the picture when you're in the frame. Okay. When you're the person in the picture.
Indeed.
You cannot see yourself because you are inside the picture. You need somebody else to be looking out and be able to describe what they see. So because I've been sitting on the outside and not necessarily, this conversation now is giving me perspective, and I'm beginning to understand and gain clarity as to why you have become the person you are. Because now I can see that as you progressed in life, you had different role models and mentors at different stages in life. And these are people that we all know. These are people that are, you know, we'll call elder statesmen in Nigeria as of today. And it's amazing how that relationship with these people have, you know, impacted who you have become today. Maybe further down, I'd like to have you speak to the importance of having people like role models or mentors in their lives. Now, when we were in school, for some reason, I'm not sure if it was a skill you had or if it was something you discovered at the time when we were in school. You just seem to be that guy that, you know, would always make people laugh, and you made life easy. I mean, with all the stress involved with postgraduate education, and some of us already were married and had kids. So it will come to class, and then you would, you know, you came to class and you kind of took the burden and the stress off of us by virtue of how well you made us laugh.
Again, it was part of the evolution of what you now refer to as GD Benson. Of course, I've had times when I didn't know who I was. So it's been a journey of self-discovery. I was a timid and shy child because I was from a broken home. And so that affected me in, I thought at some point, I thought it was a crime or it was a taboo for people to hear that your parents are not together. Because, I mean, when I was in primary school and when I was in secondary school, I saw parents bring their children to school or come to pick them from school. But for me, it was either my mom was coming or my dad was coming. They were not coming together. So it wasn't something that ever made me happy. That affected me in some way. But of course, as time went on in life, I had to break out of such. And I started to discover myself. I'm ordinarily a very playful person. So as you would imagine, when I was much younger, I would be playful and rough. I was rascally, I would be dirty. And so as I grew older, that became being verbally mischievous. Let me put it that way. Being funny, what you refer to as funny, if that's the way you say it. So yeah, it's a combination of a skill and something I learned. And when I started to learn that, look, I think I have that part of me. I started to take note of people who did it for a living. I mean, we watched a lot of comedy shows when we were growing up, local ones and foreign ones. So all of those pieced together to help me become, in quotes, that funny person you talk about.
And the reason why I decided to ask that question is, you know, very recently, well, most times I have people ask me this question. The question really is, I'm not sure what my purpose in life is. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing. And my response a lot of time is, this purpose thing is about what your passions are. Because over the years, I've also watched you evolve into becoming a master of ceremonies. And first it was, you know, again, I figured this was where this skill started from, because through school, you were doing a little bit of this. And then after we graduated, you started taking that seriously and you gradually evolved and you eventually started handling and emceeing corporate events for blue chip companies and even government agencies and organizations. And the reason why I asked this question was I wanted to be able to get your thought process of how you evolved and how you became this person that leveraged this potential or this skill that you had and you turned it into an income. Over the years, as you started doing this, what were the opportunities that, you know, that opened up to you as a result of this skill that you leveraged?
Let me start from the point of the opportunities. The opportunities have been a legion, let me put it that way. And some of them I have not even touched. I've not touched at all. Some of them I have scratched. So what happened was, about the time I finished youth service, I attended a program at a place called Daystar Christian Center. It was called the Daystar Leadership Academy. So there we thought a lot of things, life, planning your vision, having a vision and all whatnot. Then I think sometime after that, I stumbled on a book called Positioning. It was written by a marketing communications professional called, I think it was Al Rise and his daughter, or Al Rees, I don't know how it's pronounced. But before then, I had wanted to be a comedian, because I had attended Night of a Thousand Laughs from the very first edition till what? I think Night of a Thousand Laughs must have started around 96 or 97. And I think I attended the first five editions and I liked the comedians I saw and I thought I would be like them. I wanted to be like them. I think it's the first comedy show in Nigeria. It was put together by somebody called Opa Williams. Almost every comedian that you know today that has a name and a brand had performed at Night of a Thousand Laughs at some point. And I really look forward to being part of that one at some point. But then at some point I realized that, hey, it might be important for me to be very good with Pidgin English. And so looking back now, I realized that if I had been adamant and wanted to remain a comedian in the league of speaking Pidgin English, I'd have fizzled out like smoke. And so that's where the corporate angle came in. So from reading the book Positioning, I found out that I could carve a niche as a corporate MC. And then I started to gravitate towards the likes of Sonny Rabaw, a man called Herring Zeku, the late Femi Segun, There was Bisiola Tilor. There were a couple of, there was a man called Onwa Ikenna Ndaguba. He was a veteran broadcaster. He spoke so well. So I then realized that, look, I think I'm more tilted, I should be more tilted to these guys than to comedy. So that was it. And then as we're in school, the opportunity came once. Again, there's the God factor. I must add that. Two of our classmates, I don't know if you remember, what's her name now? Vivian and Muna were
Okay.
selected from our, yeah, Vivian and Muna were selected from our class to serve on a committee that was supposed to organize an event. And when the idea of
The MC.
recommending an MC came up, they mentioned my name, and I was not in school on that day. And I got to school the following day, and the dean said, "Oh, you came highly recommended to be the MC
I
for an event."
remember this day vividly. I do.
You know, so it was over lunch, and I said, "Oh, it will be my pleasure." And then the day came, and apparently, I did well because from that day till now, I mean, I had done events before then. I had done weddings, but I think from that particular point, I really started, doors started to open in the corporate space. And I can say that I've met almost everybody that is worthy of being met. It has taken me outside the shores of the country. It has given me a name, it has given me a platform, and all what's not.
And was this how you now metamorphose into broadcasting? Was this, would you say this was the one of the fruits, I'll say, of your foray into MCing?
Okay, so if you allow me to be a bit spiritual and scriptural,
No, go
if you
ahead,
remember,
please.
the story of the parable of the talents. So if the person who had five talents used the five talents and he got five more, the person who had two talents used the two talents and he got two more, the person who had one talent buried the talent, and that which he had was even taken from him. And a part of that scripture that also says that even he who has not, that which he has will be taken
Taking.
from him. I don't know what figure of speech that is in literature. So it means that everybody has something. So yes, as I started to MC, I met people who really encouraged me, who said, "Have you tried broadcasting? Have you considered broadcasting?" And then because, of course, again, I have an ear and eye for the media. I mean, I listen to radio. I used to listen to radio often and watch TV a lot. I used to see the good sides, I used to see the bad sides. And then broadcasting started becoming an area of interest. And considering that I had finished from the School of Media, I had learned quite a bit about media and how it works. I had met people. And then I went to Radio Broadcasting School, the FRCN Training School in
Yeah,
Ikeja.
in Kenya.
I met a lot of people there. And at the end of the program, we had the opportunity to do a 1 week internship in a radio station, and then I did that, and then I liked it, and that was the end. A year after, yeah, I think it was a year after. So no, let me get my numbers right. No, so I mixed it up. Years before I went to trade radio school, I had attended a creative careers fair somewhere in Lagos, and I'd met somebody who worked in a radio station, and he said, "I like the way you sound. We're about to open another radio station, and I'd like to give you a chance." And so he asked me to come in for an audition. And then I got there, and they put me just the way you are now. They gave me a headphone, and they put a mic in front of me. And they said I should speak Pidgin English. That was when I knew that speaking Pidgin English is not easy. And I'm not, and you laugh about it now, but it was a lot of work. He asked me to talk for 3 minutes non-stop,
In
speaking
pigeon.
Pidgin English, and I couldn't get it done. The same Pidgin English that I speak on the street, the bus conductor or the Okada man, or you want to buy something in the shop or you're a booker, I couldn't speak Pidgin English on radio for 3 minutes non-stop. And they halted me, and they asked me to listen to myself, that I was laughing, I was smiling, and the audience will be able to hear that. So they gave me a second chance, and I flunked it. So the person said, "Okay, maybe this is coming to you suddenly. We'll let you go, come back after a few days, and do this again." And I went back again, and the man said, "Look, young man, this is not for you. Pidgin is not your thing, so don't struggle with it." And then years after, I went to radio school. And after radio school, I had the first opportunity for an internship to be on radio. And then again, that was it. As well, while I was doing my MBA, I met somebody who was a chief executive of a radio station. And the person said, one morning, please, I'd like you to come to my radio station to come and, you know, do some review and analysis of what's happening in the policy. I said, okay, I'll think about it. And I think I was second guessing myself and I was avoiding the person.
At this point, yeah.
I was avoiding the person. And so one day I got into school and right at the door, it was the person I saw and the person was expecting a feedback. And I said, okay, I'll do it. Yeah. And so I got on radio the first day. It was breakfast. It was newspaper review and analysis. I was paired with somebody else. And I think we did a good job on the first day. On the second day, the person didn't show up. On the third day, the person didn't show up. I was meant to come on alternate days. And so they called me and said, look, this person is not showing up again. And we don't know why. Can you please come to fill in for him tomorrow? Huh. And then I went there and it became an everyday thing. And later they found out that the person had gotten an appointment. And so as I was doing the breakfast show, they said, look, we have a Sunday show that would like you to give a try. And that was it. So yeah, that was what opened the door to radio. It was from having the requisite training, and I'd done well, or I was doing well with one of the talents, which was MCing, and then the radio opportunity came. So that's it.
Amazing. Listening to your story reminds me of how Les Brown, the famous motivational speaker, how he got into broadcasting. I think he had just lost his job or something at the point, and he was trying to get himself into on the radio. And, you know, he would tell his mom, I'm not sure if it was his mom or somebody, he would just tell them that, hey, I'm going to the radio station today. Just listen, I'll be on air. He hadn't been offered the job, you know, but he would just go in there hoping that someone would offer him the job. And the very first couple of weeks, he would go in there to ask to request a place on air. And I'm not sure who this manager, who the director, whatever the person was, would always tell him, get out of here. There are no openings. But Les Brown went back every day. Onto this very fateful day, there was this presenter that was on air. He was probably getting drunk. I don't know. He had been drinking or something. And he had drunk himself to stupor that he could not even hold himself anymore on the program. And then the manager came around and saw Les Brown hanging around the studio. And I asked him, he said, is this something you can do? And this guy had been preparing for this day because he had gone to the radio station every single day waiting for this opportunity. And that's how he got on air. And he has practiced his script. And when he got that opportunity, he blew up. It just kind of reminds me of that story and how, like you said, fate mixed with preparation and being resolute as to what you wanted to do, you know, all merged together and created the platform that you now eventually had. Okay. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, Jide, you eventually went into politics. Now, I'm trying to understand how that...
I was hoping you wouldn't go there.
Oh, no, because see, when I first saw that post that you're going to be contesting, and the first thing that crossed my mind was we needed role models in these offices because, again, you had been through a lot. You had created for yourself. I mean, everything you had, listen to your story now, everything you had set out to do, you had achieved. And it was, to me, it became apparent that we needed people like you, no matter at what level of governance it may have been. But just tell us, how did that happen?
Okay, yeah, politics. Okay, so I'll say that politics has always been there. It had always been there. I mean, my father was a politician. My granduncle was a politician in the First Republic. So, I mean, at home, some way, somehow, politics has always been part of the discussion. And then sometime in 2011, I went for an event and I was listening to somebody who was chairman of a local government. And I was encouraged that I was a smart young lad. And I said, hold on, what's happening in my local government? I live and work in Surulere. And I was trying to imagine the quality of leadership that was on at the time in Surulere. And I wasn't happy about it. Then I said, okay, look, I'm going to give this thing a shot. I'm sure that it's not rocket science. It might not be easy, but I'm sure that given the opportunity, I can do better than whoever is there now. Because I found out who the chairman was. I knew where he lived. Roads in my community were bad. And so I found out where he also lived. The roads to his house were also bad. And I saw that this person was buying a new car. The people who were working with him were buying new cars. And so it was very annoying that you had the responsibility to fix the bad roads. You're not fixing them. And you're driving new cars on bad roads that's your responsibility to fix. So I decided to give it a shot. Of course, I didn't make it. This was 2011. I tried again in 20, I think it was 2017. Still, okay. Well, I mean, this time around, I think I did better. I came second in the primaries. And so after some discussions, I became the vice chairmanship candidate to the person who won the primaries.
Primaries.
Again, we ran and we lost. But I've remained in the political process since then. At least I pay attention to what's happening in my environment. I don't leave it for anybody to tell me because all politics is local. I think it was a former US president that said that. If you think about it, where you are now, you are in one, I don't know what you guys call it over there, whether it's a province or a borough or what have you. So there's somebody who has a responsibility for that locale. So if my local government works, if the next local government works, if the other local government works, our state will ultimately be better and our country will ultimately be better.
Absolutely,
Everybody
absolutely.
lives and works in the local government part time. But we pay very little attention to what's happening at the local government level. So, I mean, this is it. There's a test that I've administered on people very many times. And half, more than half the time, I find that nine people fail the question. Only one person makes an attempt. I ask people, who is the chairman of your local government? They don't know.
I wouldn't even have known.
Dude,
I would
they
have
don't
failed it
know.
as well.
But everybody mentions the governor and the president. Meanwhile, the problems affecting you the most, many of them are problems that are under the what the responsibility of your local government chairman. So I think that we should all pay more attention to that. That was what led me into politics, and then I'm still there.
I totally agree, because when I first saw your post about running for office, I immediately I knew that it must have been an issue of leadership and your desire for wanting to probably create a lasting legacy in your community where you live. And this is where I find it a bit challenging, because we have people in office that don't understand the concept of leadership. And that's why John Maxwell says that everything rises and falls on leadership. But I think we flip it the other way around, because we feel once I'm the leader, I'm supposed to be this way, and the people that I lead are way down there, and all I do is just dish out instructions or whatever they do at that level. And I think with people like you continually trying to contribute your little mite, we would definitely cause the kind of change we're hoping to create in our nation. So GJ, right now you run a PR firm. Can you just tell us how did you evolve into that role?
Oh, well, again, I've done PR now for what, about 19 years. Again, there's the universe conspiring to make the innermost desires of one's heart come into pass. I was expelled from the university in year 2000. I was a student at Lagos State University, and I was expelled for exam misconduct in year 2000. I almost committed suicide. That's a fact that people don't know when they see and hear about the GJ Benson of today. So, but I again, I'm grateful to God for the kind of parents that He gave to me. My parents, even though they were separated, they handled it the crisis together. They almost came together because of me. They managed it. They saw it as their burden, their responsibility. So the following year, thankfully, I got back into school. So one Saturday afternoon, I was flipping through the pages of Punch newspaper and I saw an advert by the Nigeria Institute of Public Relations. And as I read it, I just saw myself as a PR person. Everything that was written about who a PR person is was who my DNA told me I was.
Was.
So I cut that page out of the newspaper. A few days later, I went to their secretariat to make inquiries. And this was 2001, but I was still in school then. Then in 2003, I enrolled for the exam. I wrote the first, what do you call it, the first diet of the exam. And I wrote the second diet later. And then this was before I came for, this was before we met. We did a master's in media and communication. And shortly after that, I got an opportunity. You remember I told you I went for a creative careers fair. So one of the people that I met there was a PR company. And just by having a chat with the HR person, she said, look, let me have your CV. We might be able to work together. And then they invited me. I was there for almost a year. And again, during our MSc, when I was going to do my internship, I did in a PR firm. That was for 4 months. That was when I first came in contact with the concept of investor relations. And it sounded really nice. It sounded corporate. It had to do with figures and banking and all whatnot. So I was excited about it. And then I got a full job, which I did for about 7 months. And then I left that. And then I freelanced with a lot of people. I've done a lot of writing for the PR companies and people needing PR services, whether it's a press release or a proposal, a sponsorship proposal, a PR proposal. And I just thought that it was about time I floated my own. I've been quite active in the Nigeria Institute of Public Relations, Lagos State chapter. And then, you know, in all of my journey, the dots were connecting that, look, there are opportunities here. You might as well float your own. And then I registered a company, what, years ago. I did almost nothing with it. And then the beginning of this year, an opportunity came. Somebody had just gotten into an organization. I was looking for a PR person. And then the person reached out to me and I said, hey, we can give this a shot. And then they invited us for a pitch. And we pitched alongside three other big PR agencies and we won.
Amazing.
And we were happy. We did the projects. And you know, they were pleased with our pitch and they gave us the opportunity. And so yeah, I registered a second agency and we're up and running. Oh no, I mean the first PR company had always existed, just registered and nothing happened
okay,
with it. But middle of this year, I was ready. I had been thinking about it to have a second line agency. It's called CAST, CAST, which is Communications Advisory Strategy and Training.
And training.
So everything within that framework, communications advisory, communication strategy, and communications training.
I want to be able to give people perspective. And I mean, this is Jide from 10 years ago, and you've, you know, shared your journey over the years, the ups, the downs, the challenges, the triumphs, the opportunities, how you took advantage of them, even though you were not sure what they might lead out to be. And I hope that as people have listened to you, they can begin to see that this whole question about what is my purpose? What should I be doing in my life? Should I quit my job? Should I start a business? They all don't provide answers to you on the surface. You always have to dig deeper and follow your... You still do MCing on the side, right?
Oh, no, I don't do it on the side. I do it as a main. As a main.
Okay, as the main.
It's on the main menu. It's just because of the lockdown, you know, there have been a lull in the events industry and all that.
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing a lot more PR services now.
Okay.
I'm sure that
okay.
I hope and pray that COVID will go with it and go back to our old normal, because this new normal is not something I'm enjoying at all.
It's not favorite the main course.
It's not. Yeah. So I would say that earning from that is less stressful because I'm doing what I absolutely enjoy. I'm playing. I'm having fun. Public relations requires a lot more thinking and strategy and what have you. So in terms of figures, I won't say that I've earned much as an MC this year.
Okay.
Because we've been on lockdown since March.
March, yes.
Yeah, so
yeah.
I think I did just two events before we locked down. And since then till now, I think I've done only another two. I did one during as the lockdown started to ease out. So that's it.
And the reason why I ask that question really is also again it's to give perspective to people listening, because you said with your MC and you're doing what you absolutely love, so you're doing it without stress. It comes natural to you, and this is where going back to the question of what my purpose is or what potentials do I have, because I always tend to let people understand that. It's an easy way to arrive at that answer is to first ask yourself, what are the things you have passion for? What are you passionate about? How could you turn that into adding value to people? And how could that, you know, potentially generate revenue? And that's why I asked that question. And I wanted you to clarify that for those that are listening. Now, Jide, for those that are listening and wanting to venture into what you currently do, what advice would you have for them?
Also, I'll take it in bits. So first of all, just do it. As Nike says, your first attempt is not going to be excellent. So if you're waiting to be excellent, you may never get started. In other areas of my life, I've procrastinated, and in doing that, I've held myself back. So if it's about using your skills, they are yours anyway, so you might as well use them. So one of the things that annoys us as a people is when you see somebody that is doing something that you know you can do or you can do better. So that person has been bold or has acted boldly. And so that's what has stood that person out. So the world does not celebrate potential. The world celebrates, potentials that are maximized or that are put into action. I remember growing up seeing Maradona. So imagine if Maradona had continued to say, I can play football. I never really got onto the field of play. So it's like, you know how to drive a car and it's like going to driving school to learn how to drive. And then you know how to drive, and then you collect a certificate and say, I know how to drive, but you never really get behind the wheels. So it's about your skills. The first thing is use them. And then find a way to, find a way to polish or hone those raw skills. I think it was the same John Maxwell who you mentioned that says talent is not enough. I'm not sure if it was anyone that said that.
Yeah,
so talent is not enough. You must now find a way to put finesse into it. Some people have design skills and they now go to a fashion design outfit to go and put some finishing touches to it. So which is what I did. I found out that I love to MC, I love to speak. So I went to training school, radio training school. I went to do a master's in media and communication. I observe people who do these things the way I'd like to do it. And these things have become much easier now with the internet. I mean, YouTube is there. So if you're not watching Tedru Babyface, you can be watching David Letterman or Jay Leno or Steve Harvey or Jide Benson or Alibaba, or, you know, depending on where you want to play, the world is now everybody's oyster. I mean, if you Google it on YouTube, if you type onto YouTube how to be good at whatever it is that you want to do, I'm sure that something will definitely come up.
Jay, if people wanted to, how will they find you?
Yeah, social media. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Instagram as Babajide, BabaJeeDay. I'm on LinkedIn as Jide Benson. I'm also on Facebook as Jide Benson. On LinkedIn and Facebook, I'm there as Jide Benson. And on Instagram, I'm there as Babajide, BabaJeeDay.
Okay, and how would we find CastPR?
CastPR is also on LinkedIn. So just type CastPRNG. It's on LinkedIn. It's on Instagram. It's on Twitter.
Same, CastPRNG.
Yes, CastPR_NG. CastPR_NG. On LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Twitter.
Thank you. So guys, we'll have all the links that Jide has referred to in the description when the show goes live. And all the names he's mentioned, the Alibabas, the Gamaliel and Loso Days, we'll all have all of those links. So you can always go back and, you know, see who these people are and how they have influenced Jide's journey over the years. Jide, I want to say it's an awesome privilege to have had you. I mean, to have taken almost 1 hour of your time, if not more. For me, when I was growing up, I never knew anyone that had run a business of their own. So when the idea of becoming an entrepreneur started creeping into my mind, it was scary because I'd never known anyone that had done it besides, and I'd like to mention his name here. His name is Utibe Ukim. He was the first man I ever knew as an entrepreneur, and he gave me the first opportunity to work. And all I know about entrepreneurship in practical terms, I learned from this man. And I would watch him do what he did, and he did it with so much passion. And I wanted to just be like him. You know, and that's how I started. But again, unlike you, you've had several people mentor you all through the ages. I didn't have until that first opportunity. And even when I started my own foray into entrepreneurship, it was a struggle. It was a struggle until I met John Maxwell, and I finally understood what the missing links were. And I want to say a big thank you for sharing your story with us, for being vulnerable enough, you know, to even tell us the not so good part of the journey. At least it gives us a better clarity and it helps us appreciate who you have become today. Thank you so much, Didi, for joining us on the show today. And
that's very key. Nobody's entitled to a life without tribulation. So if you have not, if there's anybody out there whose story has been smooth all the way, the trials are coming. So we're going to have it at different stages and phases of our life. Some people is going to be their health. Some people is going to be their finances. Some people is going to be their career. Huh. Some people is going to be their children. So the challenges will come. It's for us to be able to weather it. As it, I think it was one of those motivational speakers, Robert Shula or something, that says tough times never last, but tough people do. And I think that we should, as we grow, particularly in Africa, we should be able to tell the sordid parts as well, so that people don't think that it would always be easy. Yeah, I mean, I worship under Reverend Sam Adeyemi, and he shares his own down times effortlessly. And so I just decided that I'll take a cue from that. When I share my stories, I'll always share the negatives as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jide, for once again for joining us on today's episode. I'm so honored to have you. Thank you.
This is the League of Icons. Mine your mind. Be your focus and play by a different set of rules.